Test, I'm talking. The question is the audio coming through? All right, once again, as I was saying, this is an experiment. This is online CLE. It does seem that CLE is the wave of the future online, but it may be that there are a few jumps before we get there. At this point, those of you who are still with us are all gathered in a single discussion group. And this webcast, the audio and video, was only one of five modes that we were hoping to relate to you with. One, this webcast with all its problems, but second, we were prepared to relate to you through the discussion environment, through a series of web forums in which we would ask you questions and you would respond to us, through a document library. You'll see the link to that in the nav bar to the left. And in that library, there is a rich collection of material organized according to the four subjects that we're interested in exploring. And last, by email, we were and we are intending to exchange with you in the course of the coming week by email. The plan that we had envisioned was a synchronous engagement to start us all off, during which you would respond to a series of questions and we would discuss them with you in a synchronous fashion. And then during the week, a set of email exchanges followed by a concluding session next Monday, same time, same place, hopefully not same problems, that would wrap up this little short course. The subjects that we're interested in exploring are the main topics, I think, of digital discovery: the problems associated with preservation orders, the questions raised by costs and cost allocation, some issues relating to the actual process of digital discovery, search and production, and finally issues around spoliation, the question of what happens when things don't go right. I've been eager to explore these issues with you in the context of a specific case. The case I've chosen is Linen versus American Home Products. Linen was a Massachusetts case litigated here just a few years ago. It's one of the first cases that dealt with Fen-Phen. Fen-Phen was the two-drug combination that for a while was extremely popular and widely, quickly prescribed for women to lose weight, but which turned out to have some very unfortunate side effects, one of the most devastating of which was primary pulmonary hypertension, which basically means that the capillaries in your lungs shut down and you slowly and very painfully suffocate. The plaintiff in the Linen case was a woman of 30 years age, Mary Linen. She was planning to get married, wanting to lose a little weight before her wedding day, and went to her doctor for a Fen-Phen prescription. She took it for a relatively short period of time, just a period of days, and unfortunately began to experience symptoms which over a period of months became extremely serious, ultimately leading to her painful and unfortunate death. Her lawyer, the lawyer for her estate, a plaintiff's lawyer here in Boston named Alex McDonald, brought a complaint on her behalf, a wrongful death action. He did this after first examining the literature, the open medical literature, and finding in that literature enough evidence to support a complaint, evidence that the makers of Fen-Phen had reason to know of the devastating side effect, pulmonary hypertension, and didn't do all they could in warning patients. When McDonald filed his complaint, along with the complaint, he also filed a motion for preservation of documents. And it's this that I hope will crystallize our discussion of the issue of the preservation order. Linen's lawyer, McDonald, requested the trial judge to enter an order that would require the defendant drug companies to preserve all documents relating to Mary Linen, the deceased, and to the two drugs in question, the Fen-Phen combination. And in addition to his request for preservation, he specified, and let me just read the key the following language. All defendants must take all necessary steps to assure that their employees, agents, accountants, and attorneys refrain from discarding, destroying, erasing, purging, or deleting any such documents, including, but not limited to, computer memory, computer disks, data compilations, email messages sent and received, and all backup computer files or devices, including, but not limited to, optical or magnetic storage media, until such time as the court enters a superseding order regarding the preservation of documents and potential evidence relevant to the above-captioned litigation. Now, if you would, click on the nav bar on the link that says preservation and go to the web form, and if you would, respond to the questions that I've asked there. I will leave you at this point for 5 to 10 minutes while you do that, and we'll come back then and continue our discussion based on your responses. Thank you. I'm sorry that I have been silent. I gather that that's been distracting to people who've been hoping that somehow at least noise from me would be indication that the technology is working effectively. We're hoping that you will answer the preservation question, and that once having done that, we can come back into a discussion environment and talk about the answers. It's okay. When you click on the preservation link and an order appears, if you don't see an input box, please scroll down until you do see it. It may be that your screen size is sufficiently small so that without scrolling down you won't see it in the first instance. We are learning as we go. Say it again. All right, so we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We've got some good responses. I think we could come back into discussion at this point. All right, so pencils down at this point. Let's come back into the discussion environment. In the actual case, the trial judge entered Alex McDonald's request for preservation order. He did it ex parte. He signed the order with a handwritten note that he was open to hearing a motion to vacate on very short notice. And in fact, the defendants then came forward with a motion to vacate, arguing that the preservation order was unnecessary, that the obligations to preserve evidence relevant to a filed lawsuit are sufficient in themselves, and that in the absence of some showing that the defendants were likely to destroy documents, there was no cause to issue an order. Then in response to the judge's questioning, the defendant's lawyer effectively represented to the court that the defendants would not destroy evidence that related to the lawsuit. And on that basis, the judge withdrew the preservation order. However, this was not necessarily a great outcome for the defendants, because one of the big fears with the preservation order is that it establishes a form of sanctions trap. The trap being that if you have obliged yourself to preserve, and if, like many companies, you are not really in control of your information system, then it can happen that even without express intentionality, documents covered can be destroyed. And when that happens, the consequences can be severe. Now let's just go into the discussion environment at this point and exchange thoughts about whether a preservation order such as that issued in Linen is overbroad, whether its cost is in some way out of proportion to the need for it, and whether the trap, the sanctions trap that it sets, is as feared as at least many companies suggest it should be. Yeah. Hello again. We are here actively using our fingers to communicate with you in the discussion environment. I gather that one of the things I need to do is to keep talking just so that there's audio filling the environment and making you aware that, yes, everything is still working just fine. So if that's my job, here I am. So the issues that have come up with preservation orders are, first I'd say, the overbreadth of the order. A preservation order framed in terms of all documents relevant with all of the possible permutations would seem to sweep in far more than is actually needed by a plaintiff in litigation. The idea of that which is relevant to litigation certainly doesn't include such things as sales invoices and return documents. And the fact is that if what's requested is all documents related to a product that a company produces, that can pretty much encompass all of the documents of the company. And so at some point, the question arises, is it possible for the defendant company to persuade the judge in some effective way to narrow the scope of the order so that the company can actually live with it? If what's desired is a slowing down or a stopping of the ordinary document destruction process within the company with respect to some particular categories of document, then that would seem possible. But if what's sought is a complete stopping of company process so that nothing gets destroyed on the possibility that anything might be relevant, then that seems very damaging and unwise. In some sense, a question arises whether judges are open to being educated on the subject. One of the things that struck me in talking to lawyers on both sides in the last year is that on the plaintiff's side, plaintiff's lawyers, many of them are very skeptical as to whether judges will issue preservation orders. They don't see typically judges as wildly in their favor as far as discovery is concerned. Quite the contrary. They see the process of discovery as one in which they're in the deep weeds of a swamp trying to make their way through, and if they come out with anything, it's a boon. On the other hand, company lawyers are very quick to say that preservation orders are potentially devastating to them, a matter of true concern, and the judges, more often than you might think, are quite willing to sign them without really concerning themselves with their breadth or with their cost. So that it seems that what's needed with respect to preservation orders is some sort of education program, perhaps on all sides. One of the things that I think is actually quite significant about the digital discovery environment is that whereas in the past plaintiffs' lawyers, I think, have felt like they're up against it in some sense with discovery, the digital environment is a great equalizer and gives plaintiffs tremendous advantages that they may not have appreciated before. On the other hand, it may be that judges are not quite as aware as they might be of the devastating effect that their power to issue over broad orders can have. One final thought before turning from this to our next question deals with the dilemma of the defense lawyer. The defense lawyer in the preservation order context is put in the position of arguing against the order on grounds that it's not needed and may in fact be pressed to make representations on behalf of the company. It seems a nice question. What sort of hesitance should defense lawyers exhibit when it comes to making representations on behalf of companies? When the companies themselves say that they're not truly in control of their own information systems, that they're widely distributed, that every person who works at a computer in effect is a data manager, that sending out a simple email to terminate or to observe is not likely to be effective, how can a defense lawyer make a fair representation? How can a defense lawyer risk making such representation? So now, if we can, let's turn to the second question that I'd like to see us explore, that of the cost of discovery. Questions as to whether judges should try and allocate costs. They have the power, but should they use it? And if they are disposed to use it, how should they go about it? How would you find a line to draw with respect to discovery? So at this point, go once again to the nav bar and click on the link that specifies costs. It's on the left side of your screen. Under questions, you'll see the link to costs. Please click on that and go to the web form, respond there, and come back to our discussion group when you are finished. Thanks. I'll leave you in silence for just a moment to do that. Perhaps not total silence. I'll keep mumbling this, that, or the other just to let you know that I'm here. But I'd really like you to concentrate on the cost question, if you would. Yeah.
It's about 3 or around 2.
It's cost. It's around 2. Oh, Ben may not have cleared them out, which is a problem. They are, oh, good. Oh, they've probably been working away. Am I still Professor Nathan? Okay. Oh, that's interesting. So we're actually approaching the end of our appointed time here. It's true that a great deal of it has been taken up with technical difficulty, and I actually had no idea when we started out that this would be as much of an experiment in technology as it's proven to be. When you finish responding to the question on costs, would you take the trouble to go once more to the link on the nav bar to the left of your screen, this time to feedback, and fill out that web form for us as well? It's our intention here to summarize what has happened during this session, to capture as best we can the wisdom that has emerged in the responses and in the discussion environments, and to communicate with you by email during the week. I trust that that will be a more reliable form of exchange, and I hope that it proves to be a basis for a better discussion, both technically and substantively, next week when we return. I'd like, before I leave you, to introduce you to my assistants here. You've met them in the context of the discussion groups. Sitting around the table with me, all Harvard Law students, all engaged in our digital discovery project, Alexi, Valerie, Josh, Matt, and Tom, and then off camera, other stalwart supporters. My daughter Rebecca has been on the telephone to many of you as this has unfolded. Talia Milgram Elcott, with whom you've corresponded by email, has been standing by and passing notes and trying her best to keep this on track. And Ben Edelman, who is responsible for tech with his assistant Amanda, who is behind the camera and not to be seen, is also deserving of at least a plus, if not a big plus, on the effort for the day. We hope that we can learn a lot from this. With that, I think I'm prepared to bring this to a close as far as the audio and video is concerned, and to leave you for a moment or two in the discussion groups for sign-off there. The feedback link, just to remind you, is on the left side of your screen, underneath questions, it's number 3. If you click on it, you'll come up to a web form which has some questions on it, and I hope that you'll give us the benefit of your response in that provided space. So thank you very much. This has been an interesting and, well, it's been interesting. Thank you very much.